that literally has Army Hammer. I say this without exaggeration, killing the entire family of like a Syrian migrant rapist. Insane. That's how the movie ends.
Yeah, that's insane.
Hey, everybody. I'm with Qasim Rashid, and he's joining us today where the Supreme Court had some horrific decisions. And what we always assumed would be a 7-2 decision or maybe a 6-3 decision was actually a 5-4 decision that barely protected birthright citizenship, which is quite literally in the Constitution, in the 14th Amendment. You don't even have to be a lawyer like Qasim Rashid or myself to know that. This has been happening. It's just like an avalanche. And if you just look at the past week, Qasim, we had the same Supreme Court say, Donald Trump, go ahead. You can deport 350,000 Haitians. And then we saw that accompanied with just egregious, outright racism by Republican officials against Haitians, against Somalians. Then you saw Republicans accuse Muslims, as they always have, of implementing Sharia law, as they are quite literally trying to implement Christian law and are openly telling us to forget the Constitution, which clearly states in the First Amendment, separation of church and state through the Establishment Clause. And then you saw, of course, the Supreme Court today with the birthright case where Samuel Alito, who's a son of an Italian immigrant, used the white supremacist term birth tourists to essentially talk about you and me and people who came here as children of immigrants. But he didn't refer to himself because he's white. You're seeing Stephen Miller now openly double down with his white supremacist agenda. And I don't know if you saw that Donald Trump posted an AI photo of a Nazi golden eagle on the White House and with 11 stars for the original Confederacy. But you know what? We're just supposed to say, it's not racism. It's not white supremacy. It's not white nationalism. And of course, to all of this, Chuck Schumer, I just want to set this up. Instead of talking about, Supreme Court reform, instead of talking about, this is a corrupt and compromised Supreme Court and we're going to pack the court, he goes on Blue Sky. And I want you to sort of read what he says. Despite Trump's best efforts to bully them, the Supreme Court just reaffirmed that if you're born in America, you belong in America. And then finally, because it's been a while since I've talked to Qasim, instead of the moderates and James Carville, going on air and using their privilege and their space to attack the Supreme Court, or Elon Musk, who I just informed Qasim, he didn't even know about it, has single-handedly promoted the worldwide distribution of a movie that was so hateful that Germany banned it. We'll talk about it in a second. Maybe talk about that. Maybe talk about AI. Maybe talk about crypto. Maybe talk about Israel genocide. Maybe talk about unlimited money. Maybe talk about, Donald Trump. Maybe talk about the Supreme Court. They instead have gone all in order to destroy democratic socialists, focusing on the Black, Latina, Muslim Congresswoman Dari Lisa Chevalier. That's the Democrats, folks. With all of that, I give it to you, Qasim.
I don't know where to begin, man. I guess let me start with this fact right here. Any candidate for president in 28 on the Democratic side, if you are not running on expanding the Supreme Court to at least 13, don't bother running. If you are not running to get corporate money out of politics, especially after the Supreme Court ruling today that allows unlimited dark money money to come in from billionaires, don't bother running. If you are not running on universal health care, don't bother running. If you are not running on ending the genocide in Gaza and stopping this arms trade, don't bother running. These are not insane demands. These are basic demands. These are basic, get us back to a place of equilibrium demands. And my frustration, and we're seeing this play out in Michigan, for example, right? We've got three candidates, one Congresswoman Haley Stevens running for U.S. Senate, State Senator Melody Maguaro running for U.S. Senate, and then Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed running for U.S. Senate. And you got three very different visions of America. And, Haley Stevens is all about the strongly worded letters. Maguaro is all about incrementalism. And only Abdul has the spine to say, hey, the House is on fire. Strongly worded letters and policy papers are not enough. We need to actually move and do something. And the polling is showing him in the lead consistently over and over and over again, even in the general against MAGA Mike Rogers. And the best that Democrats can do is, well, is he electable in general? the polling is telling you he is leading by 5-6 points, and the other two are down by 3-4 points. There's literally a 10-point shift of him versus the others because, you know, these corporate Democrats are so stuck on what electability means. It's a racist dog whistle term. And this is exactly what we're seeing happen with the response to New York and the victories of three amazing progressive candidates. They were called parasites. Melissa De La Rosa, Andrew Cuomo's previous chief of staff, called him and these two, you know, Claire Valdez and Chevalier, called them parasites. Last I heard, calling a Jewish person a parasite is pretty disgusting anti-Semitism, but somehow this gets a pass. And I'll close with this because there's a lot we can talk about Supreme Court too. But did you notice this, Wajahat, that what got these corporate centrists activated, it wasn't the 2016 election when a fascist won. It wasn't the 2020 insurrection when a fascist tried to overthrow the government. It wasn't the 2024 election when a fascist won. No, it was progressive, working class Democrats saying, hey, maybe we shouldn't commit genocide and instead have universal health care. That's what motivated them to act. And that is what is so infuriating to me, that you want to be taken seriously as a party, but fascism doesn't anger you. Working class Democrats does. It's indefensible. And it's, again, it goes back to where I started my comment. Anyone running for president that isn't willing to actually fight and change the status quo, stay at home, because we're not voting for you and we will campaign against you in the primary.
Yeah. And you're talking about, of course, those 13 moderate centrist Democrats led by Tom Suozzi, who have created a Promise to America pledge to destroy the Democratic Socialists. Yeah. No promise to end the Brodlarkite takeover. No promise to end genocide. No promise to end forever wars. No promise to reform the Supreme Court. And I've been waiting for them for 10 years to show any semblance of a
decade.
Fight. And they finally got roused to fight against Democrats who are too progressive. It's all a big club. None of them are your friends. They're all paid by the same people. AI, APAC, and crypto are spending record amounts of money. They're going to spend up to $40 million. APAC is going to spend up to $40 million against Abdullah Sayyid. Because, folks, they have seen the writing on the wall. The fact that they tried everything Brad Lander still won. They tried everything Mamdani still won. They tried everything Daria Lisa still won. They tried everything Claire Valdez still won. They tried everything Chris Rapp still won. They tried everything Plattner still won. But Abdul is brown, he's Arab, he's Muslim, and I mean, no disrespect to members of the House. The Senate, that is like the chess piece, right?
Yeah.
They cannot have an Arab Muslim senator who calls for the abolishment of ICE, who wants to tax billionaires, who's for Medicare for all, and who openly calls Israel's actions a genocide. Yeah. That is a game changer. So my fear is you're going to see the most unhinged, dirty, disgusting, filthy Islamophobia and anti-Arab racism, not just from the right, but also from the left. Because I want to remind you all that about 5 to 6 weeks ago, it was Mallory McMurrow who made the horrific decision, the fatal decision now, the fatal political decision to run as Temu Liberal. Because folks, I just want people to realize what they decided to do. Mallory McMurrow is looking at an epic fumble. Coming out as a progressive, you know, she's a fighter. She came out and defended transgender kids. That's when I first invited her on like 2 or 3 years ago. She didn't throw transgender kids under the bus. You know, they called her a groomer and she went there on the state Senate in Michigan and said, I'm a white, straight Christian woman and I will not allow my identity and my religion to be used against to attack LGBTQ folks. She was given this prime space in the 2024 Democratic National Convention. She talked about Project 2025. And then she made this decision. There's Haley Stevens, who's completely groomed and bought out by AIPAC. She dreams of Israel Qasem, not making this up.
That's so cringy and creepy.
There's Abdul El Sayed, the crazy leftist, whatever, you know, progressive. I'll run in the middle of both of them. I'll be Temu leftist. And they're not going to like Haley Stevens. And Abdul is too crazy. So I'll find that Temu liberal space and I'll win. And then she decided, oh, wait, this Temu liberal is not working. So then about 6 to 7 weeks ago, what did she do, Qasem? The normalization of racism and bigotry and Islamophobia by the Democrats, which Democrats don't like hearing.
Yeah.
She decided to smear Hassan Piker only when he was running with Abdul Sayyid. Hassan Piker has ran with all these other folks or campaigned for them. They never said anything. Only when Hassan Piker, who's like secular Turkish Muslim, was doing one campaign stop with the Arab Muslim candidate, the entirety of the Democratic establishment, you had, I think, Bulwark, you had the right wing, you had Republicans against Trump all come out and attack Hassan Piker and use him as a battering ram against Abdul Sayyid, right? Let's just be clear.
Yep.
I'm bringing receipts right now. And then what happened as a result, what I predicted, the Streisand effect. It actually helped Hassan Piker.
Immensely.
It helped Abdul Sayyid, right? Because people are like, well, who are these guys? Oh, shoot. They don't take money from corporate PACs. They want to end Israel's war. They call it a genocide. They want to abolish ICE or Medicare for all. I like these two guys. They ain't perfect, but I like these two guys. And then what did Mallory McMorrow do last week? She insinuated somehow that Hassan Piker and Abdul Sayyid were responsible for the shooting at the Temple Israel Synagogue. That happened last week. What also happened about 2 weeks ago, was it 2 weeks ago, the primaries, that Espelot or people associated with Espelot, Espelot said, I'm not responsible for this. Leading up to the primaries, this is what they literally campaigned on. Daria Liza is a dirty black Haitian Muslim. She's not Dominican. She's a dirty black Haitian. Do you want Sharia law? That's what they ran with. And voila, look at what we have right now. Sorry for my little rant.
No, you're right.
That is the Democrats who did that.
Yeah. And this is where I think we need to have a very honest conversation about the danger of the white moderate. There's a reason why Dr. King, in his letter from Birmingham jail, was explicit. He did not mince words. He said that the greatest stumbling block is not the Ku Klux Klaner or the white citizens counselor, but it's the white moderate. Yep. And he goes on to explain what's so problematic about the white moderate, who is more dedicated to a negative peace, which is the absence of tension, than a positive peace, which is the presence of justice, who is always telling the black person to wait for a more favorable time for their freedom and for their rights. And we're seeing this happen with Mikey Sherrill in New Jersey, with Abigail Spanberger in Virginia. You have trifecta governments. You control every branch of government, and still you're capitulating. Spanberger, for example, capitulating on the collective bargaining deal, capitulating on the bill to ban ICE from state facilities without a judicial warrant, capitulating on the marijuana bill. I mean, so many examples where we did the thing. You know, we were told, vote, get us in office, and we will fight for you. In New Jersey, Mikey Sherrill said, get me in office, and I will protect you from ICE. She gets in office, and ICE at Delaney Hall is just decimating due process of law, devastating people, and then sending the New Jersey police to, you know, keep the peace and claiming that they had nothing to do with the violence, while we're watching on video them breaking down the barricade and going after peaceful protesters. And this is why I say I don't expect anything out of MAGA fascists. They've told me, Trump has told me he's a fascist. I believe him, right? This is the old saying, Toni Morrison, that when people tell you who they are, believe them the first time and don't expect them to change. We know he's a fascist. I'm not worried about it. I will protest him. I will yell and scream and call him out every chance I get. But guess what? I donate to Democrats. I knock doors for Democrats. I make phone calls to Democrats. I try to convince people to come out and vote for Democrats. I absolutely will hold them accountable when they don't do what they're supposed to do, because we're not in a cult, right? If you want to join a cult, join the MAGA cult. But we're supposed to be in a functioning democracy where we hold our elected officials accountable. And so this, again, I'm just going to keep pounding this theme from now until 2028. If you are a white moderate, do not run. This country does not need you. We don't want you. We already have the KKK, and we already know that you are worse than the KKK. That's what Dr. King told us, and he did not lie. If you are coming at this with incrementalism, that, you know, let's just push around the edges a little bit. Get the hell out of the way. The house is on fire. We don't need your glass of water. We need a whole ass hose to put the fire out. And if you're not ready to do that, you need to leave now. You're on mute, Wajad.
What's your take on this? I want to connect it to that, this utter unwillingness to embrace Supreme Court reform by Democratic leaders, especially because I think I've been talking about it for a while. You've been talking about it for a while. I think there's numerous examples. Biden should have made the case as he was a lame duck president, and he still didn't do it. Expand the court, pack the court, dilute the court, do whatever it takes, impeach these mother effers. And today, what should have been a 9-0 slam dunk decision was a 5-4 decision, which I believe they left the door open for Republicans to basically come back through Congress and essentially undo the Constitution. And this this Supreme Court will be like, okay, no problem. And even now, I have not heard Chuck Schumer or Hakeem Jeffries use this horrific ruling, which, yes, we should breathe some sigh of relief. But it was 5-4, Qasim.
Yeah.
If I was a Democratic leader,
of our teeth.
This is an example of why we need Supreme Court reform. That's something that should have been a 9-0 decision enshrined by the Constitution was left up to these right-wing hacks and extremists.
Yep.
That would have been my tweet.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think people realize that what we're asking Democrats to do is not unprecedented. People forget that after the Civil War, when Andrew Johnson was president, who was a right-wing conservative, there were vacancies in the Supreme Court. And you know what the Senate did? They realized that this guy's going to appoint right-wing nutjobs, going to continue the legacy of Justice Taney, who was the white supremacist justice who wrote the Dred Scott decision that black people are subhuman and therefore they don't qualify for equal protection under the Constitution. They passed legislation to decrease the number of people on the Supreme Court down to 7 to prevent Andrew Johnson from appointing more right-wing fascists. And then when Grant came into power, then they extended again back to 9 and allowed us to have 2 liberal justices who then upheld the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendment, because remember, they were challenged in court after that. And there were still issues, don't get me wrong. There were still plenty of racist justices on the Supreme Court because they struck down the Civil Rights Acts of 1882. But the point I'm trying to make is that when it comes to changing the number of justices on the Supreme Court, we're not in uncharted waters. This is very much charted. This has very much been done.
It's not in the Constitution, folks. The number 9 is not in the Constitution.
It's literally, it's been, I think, 17 times or 14 times the number of justices have been, that we've been, you know, changed the number of justices in the Supreme Court. And historically, by the way, you always had 1 justice per federal district. And now we have 13 federal districts. So we should at 13. Least at minimum have 13 members of the Supreme Court. And then in addition to that, we need reform. We need term limits. It should be an 18-year term limit tops. We need to have a complete divestment of financials and a complete disclosure of financials. This is a privilege, not a right. So if you don't like your financials being publicized, then don't accept the nomination to be on the Supreme Court. That is part of it, your whole responsibility. And you and I know this in law school. They teach you that your job is not just to recuse yourself when there's a conflict of interest. Your job is to recuse yourself when there's even a perception of a conflict of interest.
Well, can we
can way beyond everyone? The perception, right? It's way out there. So I think anyone who wants to win the Democratic nomination should come out very clearly and say, we will absolutely expand the Supreme Court. I will absolutely pack the Supreme Court with people who will uphold due process of law. And I will absolutely enact a reform package that will hold accountable those justices who are known to be liars or sexual abusers or people who have committed bribes. The fact that we know Clarence Thomas's wife helped fund the insurrection while she was advising him on how to vote to protect Donald Trump is insane to me, that that's allowed to continue. So again, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. I'm sick and tired of just waiting for Democrats to grow a goddamn spine. And I am going to go scorched earth on anyone who comes at this in 2028 by kind of beating around the bushes. And by the way, we're seeing the successes happen, right? The Chris Rabb success, the Graham Platner success, the successes of the City of New York. Today, Maylot Kiros is her primary election against Diana DeGette. I'm hoping she wins. Everything she's done shows that she can win this election, and it will just further prove the point. Randy Vegas won, I guess, an AIPAC-funded corporate centrist Democrat in the runoff in California, and we're going to get them across the finish line in November. These people are out there. We just got to, and so all the people watching who are angry with me, channel that anger, get behind these candidates. If you can donate, donate. If you can't, invest your time. Either way, recognize that the many will beat the money, but we need to activate now. The house is on fire. We can't wait any longer.
Amen. I was talking to, you know, Allison and Dina and all those people who we had the same strategic approach, that, you know, this is how you cull it. You take over the party. You put the pressure on the centrists and the feckless people. You get them to reform. But what I was saying and what I disagree with them on is they're a little bit too nice. They're a little too good cop. And I was saying, even though the strategy is sound and logical and rational, it's the only way to do it. I want to be bad cop. I want to put the fear of God in them. I want to make it very clear I'm not your friend. I don't need the invites to your parties. I don't need you to like me. I know you see me as a brown demon, a dog. I know you see me as a Muslim extremist. I know. You can't, you know, I've been around in this game for a long time. I see what you did to Mamdani. I see what you're doing to Dara Eliza. So, okay, I'll be the brown demon. I'll be that Muslim growling, standing with the bat outside, you know, and you'll be afraid of us taking over. That's right. And then I'll send the Allisons and the Dinas and the others out to, you know, do diplomacy with you. And then they'll say, listen, look at these brown demons here, this Qasim and this Waj. And they represent a lot of these angry Americans. Listen, you got to give them something. And Qasim, you and I could sit there and be like, you know, scary Muslim, like, ah, and then we'll just be drinking our chai because we're kind of harmless. But, you know, I don't want to do this type of like, well, you know, these Democrats, you know, we have to vote for them other than the Republicans, because we've had that for the past 10 years. And I think they know that. I think they know, listen, when push comes to shove, these guys are toothless. They're going to vote for us. They're not going to vote for Donald Trump. And I think they're wrong. 2024, yep. A lot of people will stay at home, but they're so arrogant. They're so lost. They're so in their own ass. They're so egotistical that they still think, oh, no. That's the Carville approach, right? James Carville said, we got to play possum. We just got to play possum. Let Donald Trump destroy the country. And then, you know, people vote for the Democratic Party. But what he hasn't seen is the fact that the Democratic Party has a lower favorability rating than the Republicans. And furthermore, what he fails to see is now that they're turning on the establishment. The more the establishment attacks you, the more people are like, oh, you're attacking Dari Leeza? We'll vote for her. You don't like Brad Lander? We'll vote for him. You hate Mamdani? We'll vote for him. And then you saw Carville gives away the plot. I can't be part of a party that will have Dari Leeza Chevalier in it. And I think Ta-Nehisi Coates' assessment of it was great. He's like, black and brown people voted for Dari Leeza. So you say vote blue no matter who, except when black and brown people vote for the candidate you don't like. And then you say you're not going to respect their vote, which means you just see us as props.
That's the thing, right? This is a James Baldwin statement. I can't believe what you say because I see what you do. Black women are the backbone of the party, they tell us. But then when a black woman like Angie Nixon is running for Senate in Florida, they bring in Alexander Vindman, who's a genocide denier and vehement anti-Muslim bigot. He's on record condemning all Muslims. His wife said that Jews have a culture of life and Palestinians have a culture of martyrdom on podcast.
Is that Alex and Rachel?
Yeah. Mortifying. But Angie Nixon, extraordinarily well-qualified black woman, state rep, passed fantastic and critical gun violence prevention legislation, has been a community activist and servant in a community servant in Florida for decades. But no, we can't nominate her for the Senate. Let's bring in a mediocre white man who is a genocide denier and praises the IDF as a military that holds high standards. And that's my frustration here. That's where I feel like we're starting to see people turn. There's the old adage now that, you know, capitalism, anyone can be rich. Communism, no one can be rich. Democratic socialism, anyone can be rich, but no one should be poor. And I think that's the message that's resonating with people right now. I don't know if you've seen the latest polling, but democratic socialism has a higher approval rating in the Democratic Party than straight up capitalism, because people are recognizing that, yes, it's good to make money, but not at the expense of someone's basic human dignity. I don't want to become rich because you need insulin and I'm charging you $12,000 a vial. I don't want to become rich because you don't have a home and I own, you know, 100,000 homes because I'm Blackstone or BlackRock, whatever the hell that fascist organization is buying up homes. I don't want to be rich if it means that you can't afford basic tuition for your kids who are going to be going to college soon. But this is the world that we've created, that's what they define as capitalism. To me, an economically just system is one in which people are rewarded for their innovation to make life better. They're rewarded for that next widget they built, the next idea they had. Not that they are rewarded for exploiting people in a new way. And that's the problem with our system right now. This is how you can have a trillionaire. I had a post that went viral that these two headlines were in the same week. Elon Musk becomes world's first trillionaire. And in the same week, 60% of Americans are unable to make ends meet.
Yep.
It should offend every person of conscience. You can't tell me that Musk worked a trillion times harder than 250 million Americans. You would have to be insane to make that assumption, but that's where we are right now. And so what I'm asking folks to do is just channel their energy in this space. There are so many amazing candidates running for office. Salam Bhatti is another candidate running for Congress in Virginia that we need to get behind. And I can tell you from my experience, getting started locally makes a big difference. I live in Naperville, Illinois. It's an affluent town, no doubt about it. they were going to build a data center here. And the city council is ready to vote for it. We activated, we organized, and we got them to flip. And they voted 6-1 against the data center. Now it's dead. ICE fascists have been coming to our town. We activated, organized, and we passed an anti-ICE ordinance in this town to tell ICE that you cannot come on city property without a judicial warrant. Gun violence prevention. We became the first city in the country to ban AR-15s being sold in our city. It went to the Illinois Supreme Court and then the U.S. Supreme Court, and we won. And so it starts locally.
Well, you're here today. The Supreme Court is going to look at that case about states limiting AR-15s.
I did see their ruling yesterday about Hawaii.
Supreme Court is going to take up that case. What do you think the Supreme Court is going to do?
Of course they're going to allow it, right? I mean, of course, because of the Heller case from 2008, that one absurd vote by Antonin Scalia is still haunting us as well. And again, it just goes back to what we were saying.
I'll just real quick. Yeah. Supreme Court on Tuesday said it will decide later this year whether state bans on the possession of AR-15 firearms and similar semi-automatic assault-style guns violate the Second Amendment. Just for...
Crazy. It's absolutely... And I mean, this is what I love about the argument that, like, well, it says right to bear arms. Like, right, okay, if we're going to take an originalist... And a critical interpretation, then let's use the muskets from that point in time to talk. That takes 60 seconds to load. I'm perfectly okay with people having unlimited muskets that take 60 seconds to load that are accurate for a whopping distance of 20 meters and then they veer off and they can't hurt anybody. I mean, it's the selective activism they have. Justice Berger talks about this, conservative Justice Berger, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, said that the NRA's interpretation of the Second Amendment is the greatest fraud, I repeat, fraud ever enacted on the American people. And I mean, these are the conversations that we need to have. And by the way, for those watching, if you aren't a subscriber to Wejahat or to me, we do want your support because corporate media is being bought out by these billionaires. We've seen Barry Weiss drive CBS and 60 Minutes into the trash. Larry Ellison's buying out CNN and HBO and all these corporations. They're doing it. Brendan Carr is allowing the FCC to have 80%, one company control 80% of local media. They're doing it because this is how you get state media. And independent media is going to be the only way that we're able to get accurate and consistent information. Don Lemon's a good friend of yours as well. He was mentioning that he's in France right now for a media conference. And he goes, people are tired of legacy media. They're focused on independent media because they recognize that these legacy media outlets are just selling people out to the highest bidder. So if you can invest in us, we don't have a paywall. As Wejahat always says, we're very bad capitalists. But we do want to be able to continue to provide this content. So if you can become a paid subscriber, please do. But above all, keep sharing this content. Wejahat, before I throw it back to you, I wanted to ask you, do you see, what changes do you see happening now that the Supreme Court has ruled that citing the First Amendment, that any restrictions on campaign donations is a restriction on free speech? How do you see that transforming our midterm elections right now?
Yeah, because there were three major decisions today.
Yeah.
I think all of them kind of disastrous because, yes, everyone can breathe some relief after that 5-4 decision. But the fact that it's 5-4 should terrify us. These originalists, these fraudsters, these hacks, these right-wing extremists, they literally, folks, ignored the Constitution. They literally ignored 250 years of precedent. And they said, we don't care about the Constitution. And Samuel Alito, in his dissent, used a white nationalist term and said that essentially anyone who's not white is a birth tourist. He is the son of an Italian immigrant. So he's a birth tourist. Wow. Stephen Miller's families were birth tourists. So all this to say is they don't care. They're telling you openly now. Now they're just flaunting it. We don't care. We don't care about the Constitution. We don't care about the rule of law. We don't care about the intentions of the founding fathers. We will do whatever we want with the Calais decision. We don't care. We're going to go against our own decision and allow Alabama to bum rush racist redistricting. And it wasn't just us saying it's racist redistricting. It was the lower courts who said these are racist maps. We don't care. We're going to do whatever we want to get white Christian rule forever. And in order to do that, we're also going to allow unlimited campaign spending, right? We're going to weaken campaign finance laws. So go all in, Republicans. Broligarchs, techno-fascists, oil and gas companies, crypto, AI, and buy up the 2026 and 2020 elections, which is why Donald Trump on Truth Social, he saw that and he openly said, huge, huge victory, right? He praised it. I think we're going to see, I mean, gosh, Citizens United unleashed dark money. We're going to see the broligarch class. Like you said, they've captured TikTok, they've captured social media, they've captured Twitter, they've captured CNN, they've captured Warner Brothers, they've captured
Meta,
they've captured Paramount, they've captured CBS. They're going to cap. This is their capture. They're going all in to capture Congress and White House. And some could say they've mostly captured it. But for them, what I've seen, Qasim, in the past week, just go back the past week, the type of rhetoric, the type of mania, the type of desperation, the fact that all the hoods are off, the fact that they're going against separation of church and state, the fact that they've gone all out against Haitians, Somalis, Muslims, the fact that they're just doubling down without any dog whistles. It's like with a bullhorn. I think they see it. They realize, oh shit, we're losing the Iran war. Oh yeah. Shit, we're losing people on AI. Oh shit, we're losing people on Israel. Oh shit, we're losing people on affordability. Donald Trump now just doesn't even care. Oh, Donald is dying. Donald openly said, I don't care about affordable housing. I yep. care about the SAVE Act. I don't care about Americans' financial situation. And so I think they're telling you the plot. Okay, we realize that the masses are rising. We're going to crush the peasants. I think this is a Samson option, Qasim. They're going to bring down the pillars, right? This is why I call it the Death March. They're playing for all the marbles, which is why they're not hiding it anymore. They're like, we're the supervillains. Hi, guys. We're the supervillains. This is our supervillain plot. We're going to do this. We don't care. We're going to cover up the Epstein files. We're going to end democracy. We're going to capture the Supreme Court, capture the House, capture Congress. We don't care about DEI. We don't care about multiculturalism. In fact, we hate it. We want to go back to 1853, and right. we're going to use our money to buy it all up. And bitch, you're not going to stop us. You're nothing. We have all the money in the world. I'm Elon Musk. I'm a trillionaire. What are you going to do? Nothing. Democrats, you're weak pieces of shit. You're our bitches. We know you're bitches. We don't respect you at all. You're weak and feckless. And we're going to buy you out too. And so we're going to create PACs, and we're going to bring in Sherry Bustos, who left the Democratic Party and became a lobbyist. And by the way, her clients, I'm her client, OpenAI. Mm-hmm. And Oracle, and now we're going to spend so much money, and they're going to run pro-growth deregulation ads, and then we're going to have a centrist, even if it's a Democrat. Don't worry, we got that covered too.
Yeah.
We're going to buy him out, and he's going to be our tool. So when this AI bubble bursts, when it's revealed to be a giant Ponzi scheme, we're going to have our guy, whether Democrat or Republican, say too big to fail. We're going to get money. You're going to get effed. We're going to build all our space rockets. And if we can't build our space rockets, don't worry, we're going to build our bunker. Either way, we're going to win. The House always wins. The deck is completely stacked against you, and there's nothing you can do about it. Sorry for my rant.
Yes. No, it's a good rant. We still got to talk about Islamophobia, and we'll get to that in 1 second. But one of the rulings of the Supreme Court that was actually the right ruling was when they denied writ to Trump on the E. Jean Carroll case. And implicit in that, so that means that now he's exhausted all legal maneuvers to avoid paying her the $5 million he owes her plus the $100 million jury verdict. But there's something extraordinarily concerning about this, right? By her winning this case and by the Supreme Court saying, no, Trump, we're not going to bail you out, they are implicitly and explicitly admitting that, yes, you actually are a rapist.
Yes.
And you actually did rape this woman.
Yes.
And you've face the consequences by a majority of your peers, and the judge decided that, yes, you actually are a rapist, and now you're going to pay the monetary consequences. Now, this was in a civil court, not a criminal court. Should have been in a criminal court, but you will pay the monetary consequences.
Yeah, that's why we always say he's held liable for sexual assault.
Yeah, well, the judge was asked if it could be called rape, and the judge in that court said, yes, it actually is rape in all textbook definitions. She goes, the only reason that word wasn't used is because New York state law doesn't technically define it that way, but for all intents and purposes, it is rape, which is why also ABC was cowardly to capitulate to Trump and give him $15 million when he sued them for calling him a rapist. But anyway,
he was right.
I would love for Trump to sue the independent journalists and speakers talking about this, because the discovery would be fantastic.
Yeah.
All that to say, the Supreme Court is admitting all these things about Trump, that he's a rapist. The Supreme Court has now acknowledged that, yes, you will go down in history as a rapist president, and still continue to give him power, still continue to defer to him. That should be a disqualifying factor for anyone. Any MAGA who says that this man is chosen by God and he's walking the biblical course and he's following Jesus' example should be made to answer for that. Any politician, Mike Johnson, should be made to answer for that. But they won't. Instead, what they'll do is project on Muslims with the grotesque Islamophobia that we're seeing. I don't know if
groomers.
Of course. I mean, notwithstanding the data shows, you know, even Tim Tebow put out this data, by the way. He's by no means some liberal or progressive darling. But even Tim Tebow put out that white men are responsible for more than 70% of child sexual abuse and CSAM, child sexual abuse material, that's put out there. 30% of the population responsible for more than 70% of the abuse out there. They are way overrepresented. But what we're seeing in states like Texas, I don't know if you saw the new the education guidelines.
Yep.
But they are gutting everything. They're gutting Ann Richards by calling her the first female governor of Texas. They are stripping away indigenous history. They are calling the labor rights movement to be worker riots. And they are not only mandating teaching Bible study in schools, but they are teaching that Islam is a violent religion, that Muhammad, God forbid, was a warlord and a terrorist. So this is Christian nationalism 101. And notwithstanding all of that, you probably saw that in the same month in Texas that they sentenced protesters, anti-ICE protesters, to up to 100 years in prison, they let a serial child sexual abuser walk after 30 days. Ken Paxton wanted to give him only one day. He got
Adam Hoffman. Yeah,
we're talking about Adam Hoffman's show.
Adam Hoffman, Ken Paxton's attorney general, made a sweetheart deal with Adam Hoffman, a friend who raped his son's
best friend's son
for 3 years.
Yep.
Instead of being convicted, a felon, and spending his life in jail, instead they negotiated a deal where he would just be given a slap on the wrist with a misdemeanor, and he didn't even serve the full sentence of, I think it was 2 months in jail, only a couple of days, and then to make it even worse, he doesn't have to register as a sex offender in the state of Texas.
That's right.
It's every accusation is a confession. They're obsessed. Elon Musk, the world's richest man, who's captured Twitter and made it as a propaganda site for Nazis, has been promoting nonstop white supremacist conspiracies, like almost daily, obsessed with saving Western white civilization, the declining white birth rate, promoting all the most hateful people like Tommy Robinson and Nigel Farage and neo-Nazis who talk about Muslim migrants raping white women, groomers. Yet he was the one who partied with, wait for it, Jeffrey Epstein. They have not asked for the release of the Epstein files. No comment on Paxton literally releasing a child rapist.
Yep.
Literally every week there's an example of like a Republican pastor being arrested for rape, pedophilia, right? Nothing about Donald Trump being a rapist. Nothing about like white men raping and kidnapping women. But whenever there's a migrant, Elon Musk is there pouring gasoline on the fire, which, folks, has led to race riots in England, in Belfast, in Scotland, where a man, literally coinciding with Elon Musk and all his hate mongers on Twitter amplifying this, he stabbed 5 Muslims, right, to protect Western civilization. Just 5 random Muslims. They're random. And if you think, folks, well, it's just Muslims, what do I care? I'm not Muslims. It's anyone who looks Muslimy. They're attacking black people, brown people, people who are citizens, people who are immigrants. They're attacking, wait for it, cops. And this is where I'm sad that I had to be the one to tell Qasim about this. But over the weekend, Elon Musk, I've mentioned this, and Variety just did an update on this. Over the weekend, Elon Musk has been posting nonstop about this movie called Citizen Vigilante. Citizen Vigilante stars, can't make this stuff up, canceled actor Armie Hammer, who was accused of sexual assault and rape. Armie Hammer is a white American, a tourist or living in Europe, who decides to be Charles Bronson Vigilante. And he decides to take justice in his own hands and go after these migrant groomers who are raping white women. And so the movie ends, I'm not making this up, this movie ends with Armie Hammer finding the Syrian migrant rapist and not only executing him, executing his mother, his father, and his sister, who were all in some way complicit. And Germany banned the release of this movie because they realized, oh my God, the far right is going to use this to incite hate against black and brown people. Elon Musk found out about it, posted the movie for free on Twitter, has been amplifying it nonstop. It is a bestseller on Amazon. And we just found out today that based upon Elon Musk amplifying this movie, it now has international distribution, which will lead to, as I said before, and I pray I'm wrong, I don't think I am, it will literally lead to violence. People are going to die because of this. Sorry for my rant again.
Gossip. No, don't apologize. This is kind of a revival of the 1915, The Birth of a Nation,
KKK
propaganda film. And I think it just goes back to the you know, we call this the jihad of the pen, the intellectual jihad of the pen. It goes back to the importance of why we need to have independent media, accountable voices to be able to push back against this disinformation, because it's just not covered in any kind of meaningful way. You know, Wijahid, you and I have been calling out this fascism for well over a decade. We warned. I mean, I remember reading your writings back under the Obama administration that, hey, these drone strikes that you guys think are cool and fun because, you know, the guy wearing a cool suit and shades is doing it, this could potentially be hijacked by a future president. And I remember being told, you're overreacting. It's not going to happen. You know, those days of Bush and everything are gone. They're behind us. It's not going to come back. And I will never forget the moment when Keith Ellison, who was then in Congress, the only Muslim member of Congress, although maybe Andrew Carson was there at the time, but first Muslim member of Congress, was on ABC with George Stephanopoulos and Maggie Haberman. This was in July of 2015. And they were talking about this ridiculous candidate named Donald Trump running for president. And Keith Ellison said, look, I'm a black man in America. I've seen crazier things happen. This man's got some momentum and he's going to be the Republican nominee. And George Stephanopoulos and Maggie Haberman laughed in his face.
I remember.
They like guffawed and laughed in his face like petulant, pathetic, arrogant children. And Keith just stood there like a man and said, look, just watch what happens. And history proved him right. And I thought it was extraordinarily poetic justice that George Stephanopoulos then had to pay, you know, be part of a $15 million fine paid to Trump for, you know, calling him out for the fascism that he was engaging in. But this is the point, right? You've got people like Elon Musk just being unapologetic fascists and white supremacists and great replacement theorists.
Jake Hiles.
And the list goes on and on. And then you have these enablers, like in corporate media, like Haberman and Stephanopoulos, who don't have the integrity. I don't think they ever apologized to Keith. They should. They should put out a public apology admitting that they were being racist fascists, that they were wrong, that Keith was right, and that maybe they should just shut up and listen to black and brown people next time. And again, going back to, you know, this theme that I'm making here, we can get out of this, despite everything we're saying. Anyone watching who thinks that Wijahid and I are like hopeless and the sky is falling, no. We're calling out the injustices for what they are, but I promise you, neither one of us are hopeless. We are entirely optimistic because we have faith in people. And this is where I ask each of you, keep channeling that rage into building community, into organizing effectively. That's the only way that any point in any country in history, there's been a response to injustice. It's been a groundswell of support. It's never been top down. It's been from the bottom up. And this is where I ask each of you to be involved with us to make this happen.
I also want to say, if you think we're being hyperbolic, this just came out about 30 minutes ago. Republican Texas Senate nominee Ken Paxton just announced that he's calling for nationwide restrictions on IVF. This comes days after the Texas GOP passed a measure calling to completely ban IVF across the state. They're playing for all the marbles. They want to go back to 1853. If it's a choice between expanding this country and sharing it with the rest of us or burning it down, what have I always said? They will choose to burn it down. They will burn everything down, but they will never, ever, ever give up white male supremacy. It's always been the plan. That's the conundrum of America. You always have a Statue of Liberty welcoming people like my family and Qasem's family, and then you always have a white rapist like Donald Trump trying to grab her pee, right? This country has been racist to its core. White supremacy, capitalism, and misogyny are its enduring sins. It has never confronted it. And Donald Trump is the inevitable end result. And if given a choice between just giving it up, like just give that up and everyone can be happy. Look at the World Cup, man. Most of the world is like normal. Yeah. Most of the world is okay. Right. Like that's the best thing about the World Cup. Like you see in these liberal cities, all these different people are coming and they're all like hugging each other and they're like crying when their team loses. Like most people, I think, are okay with this, but these people cannot. It's the disease of white supremacy. It's just nonstop misery. Even when they have everything, they have nothing.
The tragedy is it's
not just destructive, it's self-destructive. Because you're seeing in Oklahoma, real quick, in Oklahoma, like what has it accomplished? They have one of the worst education systems, one of the worst healthcare systems. And then they voted against raising the minimum wage. They will die for this, folks. But before they die for it, they will kill you.
That's the dying of whiteness that Professor Jonathan Metzler talks about in his book. I was going to add that what they're afraid of, what they're deathly afraid of, you know, Wajahat, you remember 19 years ago. You remember the year 2007, I'm sure. 19 years from now, 2045, you know what's supposed to happen? We're supposed to be a country that is minority-majority.
That's the fear.
The number of black and brown people are going to outnumber white people. My eldest son was born in 2009. That was the first year that more non-white babies were born in this country than white babies. And Obama was elected that year, a few months prior as well. And so you have this white lash that's been festering and building and kind of running unabated. And you have a country built on the genocide of one people and the enslavement and genocide of another people that never had a Truth and Reconciliation Commission, that never paid restitution or reparations, that never had any kind of accountability for the countries or for the states and counties that committed these injustices. In fact, the only people involved in slavery that ever got reparations were the white enslavers in DC for losing their enslaved people. And so you have this festering rage for centuries that was never properly addressed. And now you have this fear of black and brown people not getting special treatment, but basic equal access treatment. Now you've got the black welfare queen trope, the Willie Horton trope.
But they don't even want that, Qasim. Like, equality to them is oppression.
Exactly,
like,
really, right.
All people want is like equality. They're like, no.
No,
can we have
even
equal
that.
Rights? No.
Be subservient to us.
Shot? No.
And that's the point, that by 2045, they will know that they will be demographically outnumbered in every way, shape, and form. And so this is their last-ditch effort to stop all non-white immigration. Why, of the 8,000 refugees that the U.S. has accepted this year, 3 are Afghan. Every single other one is a white South Afrikaner. They are trying to reverse this whole great replacement nonsense. And the only reason you would worry that this country could become majority non-white is because you recognize that minorities have been historically oppressed in this country, and you don't want a taste of the medicine that your ancestors have dealt out. And this is the point. Black and brown people, at least most of us, don't want revenge. We just want basic equality. I can't speak for the ones who want revenge, because at the same time, this country was built on genocide and enslavement, and there was never any accountability for that. But what I can say is that this methodology that we're seeing, this white lash that we're seeing, is going to get worse. And the final point I'll make before I throw it back to you, Wajahat, is that while we're seeing this kind of groundswell of white supremacist support from MAGAs, the response from the corporate wing of the Democratic Party has simply been apathetic. It's been appeasement. It's been you're overreacting. It's been you're being too extreme. We need incrementalism. It just doesn't work. When you're falling off a cliff, incrementalism doesn't work. You got to climb back up.
Yeah, it's failed for 10 years. I don't know. Will America survive? Not like this. The one good news that I have is there are more of us than there are of them.
Yes.
The one good news that I have is they're very unpopular. The one good news that I have is the more and more they reveal themselves, people see the ugliness, the cruelty. And because we're selfish and we're American and our religion is capitalism, ultimately, when it affects people's bottom line and their wallets, they turn. And we've seen this hate affect Americans' bottom line. Like you said, a majority of Americans are having trouble making ends meet. And now Donald Trump is saying, I don't care about the financial situation of most Americans. I don't care about affordable housing. Affordability is a hoax, right? He literally does not give a shit. And Americans also hate naked corruption. And it seems, thankfully, most Americans also hate the rape of girls. He's losing on the Epstein files. He's losing on forever wars. Yep. He's losing on supporting Israel. He's losing on his economic agenda, which is disastrous. He's losing on corruption. And people are like, all right, if white supremacy helped me, I don't know, afford healthcare and get a home, maybe. But this isn't helping me. So what are they doing instead? Instead of reforming and changing and adapting, they're willing to burn it all down. They're bunkering down, folks. And we have to, I'm going to say it, crush them. We have to legally crush these people. And we need brawlers and fighters, which is why, to Qasim's point, anyone who goes for like milquetoast appeasement, they're a collaborator. Anyone who goes for centrist type of reconciliation, you're a collaborator. Yep. You cannot collaborate with a fascist who wants to punch you in the face. You can't play footsie with the fascist. The fascist will always win. If you don't believe me, I give you the past 10 years. And if you especially don't believe me, you just look at the past week. If the past 10 years is too much, I'm giving you from today, look at the Supreme Court ruling and go back a week and listen to them. Listen to them. They're showing you who they are. Trust the evidence of your eyes and your ears. And folks, if you think they're only going to go after the darkies, Renee Nicole Good was a blonde white woman shot and killed in broad daylight. And Jonathan Ross, her murderer, is back on the job. And Donald Trump's Department of Justice wants to investigate her widow. If a blonde white mother can be shot and killed, that means no one is safe.
Yep.
Right? They're coming for after all of us. And this is the moment, folks. You better organize. Your whiteness won't protect you. Your wealth won't protect you. All these wealthy Pakistanis and Muslims that you and I talked to, Qasim,
yep,
who are like, oh, we survived 4 years of Trump. Oh, 9/11 happened a long time ago. Oh, I drive a Tesla. I drink rosé with Karen. I golf with Chet. You look just like me, mother effer.
Yeah.
You look just like me. And to them, you are an invader. I don't care how many rosés you drink. I don't take how many shots of whiskey you take with Chet. I don't care how many times you've gone to a Bon Jovi concert. I don't care how many Teslas you own. I don't care how good your golf stroke is. You are seen as a dirty, dark invader just like me. And now you realize it. Oh, shit. My wealth won't protect me. My closeness to whiteness won't protect me. My kid goes to an Ivy League school and my kid's white, not white, and they don't like me. Oh, my kid, based on his name and his skin color, might not get that job in corporate America. Oh, no. Oops. Whoopsie. We're all in it together, folks.
You probably saw the Republican Muslims in Texas weeping. At the Texas Republican Convention because they were told to either convert to Christianity or leave the country. And I'm like, I don't understand the lack of confidence these people. Maybe they weren't loved enough as children, which may not be far from the truth if they're the children of Pakistani parents who are immigrants. But at the same time, grow some spine and or testicular fortitude and have some self-respect. I'll close with this.
I do golf with you, Chet. I do golf with you, Chet.
Yeah.
I That's also right. vote Republican. I hate blacks.
That's
I
right.
I hate those Latino. I came here legally, Chet. And you and
anti-black
me,
racism.
Your wife, Karen, we drink whiskey together, Chet.
The anti-black racism in the South Asian community is another episode that we need to have a conversation about as well. But I will close with this on this positive note. I'm seeing two things happen. While I am getting an increase in anti-Muslim comments, get called stand N-word, basically on a daily basis at this point, I'm also seeing a new kind of a revival of people who have said that I was never active before. Is it too late to get active now? My answer is no, it's not too late. It's never too late. As long as you have air in your lungs, it's not too late. You can get active. Some people will be upset. What took you so long? They have the right to be upset, but that shouldn't deter you from getting active and getting involved and supporting the people and organizations who have been doing the work for a long time. So get involved. I'm also getting emails from people who said, look, I was a moderate. I didn't think it was that serious. I'm beginning to understand how serious it actually is. How do I get involved? And I love that because it shows self-reflection. It shows people willing to recognize that things have changed and we need to do better. And then my favorite kind of message are from people who said that I was raised in a right-wing environment and I hated Muslims, I hated gay people, I hated immigrants, and I'm beginning to understand that I actually am the problem. How do I do better? And I asked them, are you willing to make the commitment? Because this is not an easy journey. You're going to be socially outcast. Your family's going to disown you. Your friends are going to disown you. You may even get threats of violence because you're going against the status quo. And if you're willing and ready to do that, then welcome aboard. We need all hands on deck. So as much as we see the hate rising, it's also creating a stirring of the hearts,
yeah,
so to speak.
Yeah.
And that's exciting. And I want people to know that no matter what you've done in the past or thought in the past about underrepresented marginalized communities, it is not too late for you to say, hey, you know what? I'm actually going to change my life, not live a life of hate, and do better. And I just want to emphasize this. There are people who aren't going to trust you at first. And you have to understand you're dealing with people who have gone through immense trauma. Give them time. Don't center your own feelings. I don't want your white tears. I want your courage to come forward and say, hey, I want to learn to do better. I'll take my lumps. But we're in this together and you have my support. And then follow it up with meaningful action. And I promise you, you will be part of the answer to the problems that we see today in no time.
Very well said, folks. Very well said. It's going to take all of us. We need a multi-generational, multi-cultural coalition of the willing. There's more of us than there are of them. And we have
this
story. Things are going to get far worse, folks. There are. But we're going to have to... have that testicular and vaginal fortitude.
There you go.
Because, respect to the vagina. I've seen my wife give birth 3 times. I'm like, yo, if someone calls you a vagina, I will take it as a massive compliment. But that's what, you know, we're going to have to just prepare ourselves for the pain. But from the pain, hopefully there comes awareness, there comes empathy, there comes solidarity, community building. And inshallah, we're playing for the, not just for our lives, Qasim, we're playing for our children's life. And I always say this, we're Muslim. We can be, this is a safe space to be Muslim. Life is short, as we know. Death is the inevitable end of life. It's part of the journey. We believe one day, inshallah, we will be in some way, shape, or form recreated. Not recreated, but we will re-meet our creator, or rather.
That's right.
And our creator will ask us, what did you do with your time? What did you do with your privileges? What did you do with this beautiful thing that I gave you that is called life? And I better have a good answer when I meet my creator, right? And so do I want to meet my creator and tell him, well, I was a coward and I just had my head stuck in the sand and I protected myself and only myself, or I was selfish and I made sure I could get as much money as I wanted, or I used whatever power and privileges I had as a middle-aged dad to ensure that at the very least, my children could inherit a better future. And you know, that's how I want to meet my creator. I'm sure you also want to meet your creator that way as well.
That's
right. And furthermore, I will say that, it's one of those situations where this is a good fight, folks. I've said this before, I'll say it again. We're in a really good fight. This is a moral fight. This is a righteous fight. We're on the right side of this fight. You get to take on fascists. You get to take on Nazis. You get to take on white supremacists. You get to take on the modern day Pharaoh. You get to be the modern day Moses. The Pharaoh throws down, you throw down. And every age has its Pharaoh. Every age has its Moses. Who do you want to side with? That's a choice. And at the end of the day, the Pharaoh drowned. All his wealth and all his power and all his space shuttles could not protect him. And it was a shepherd with the staff and the truth that ultimately won. So that's all. I believe that this is a good fight. And I don't think you could be neutral in this fight.
No.
And just think about it. Think about how do you want your children and your grandchildren to remember you? Oh, yeah. Like my dad and my granddad and my grandmom or my mom or my aunt or my uncle, man, they were in it. They fought the good fight.
Yeah.
They fought it with cheer and joy, and they helped other people. And they weren't rich, but damn it, they're on the right side of history. In fact, they're the heroes of our textbooks. Final word to you, guys.
I always reflect on the words of the late, great Muhammad Ali, where he says, service to others is the rent you pay for your time here on earth.
Oh, yeah.
And when people ask me why I do this, my answer is I'm just trying to make rent. Like, rent's going to be due eventually when I stand before my creator. And I just need to make sure I've paid rent, because at that point, it's going to be too late to make rent. And so I'm trying to do what I can now to be able to say that, hey, if I came up short, it's not for lack of trying. And you can look at my heart and know I gave everything I had. And that's really all I care about at this point. And I think this community that we have surrounding us is amazing. And I'll say, I'm going to Syria in a few months.
Oh, wow. I've always wanted to go, man. That's amazing. Amazing trip. Well done.
And I'm going with a nonprofit that's been on the ground for over a decade. And I'm going for a very painful reason, Mujahid. I'm going to provide hearing aids to Syrian children who lost their hearing due to the bombs that we, as the U.S. government, dropped on Syrian children. They lost their hearing as a result of that. And I've raised, again, in this community, we've raised about $30,000 so far to provide hearing aids to these children. And to me, that's like one small step of restitution and reparations that we need to make here. I'm grateful for this community. I'm deeply grateful for this community, because we can do stuff like that. And we will continue to do stuff like that. And my ask of each of you is, the most important currency that we can ever ask of you is not actually your money, it's your trust. And it's your call to hold us accountable, because that is the way this works. This is not a one-way street. This is a two-way street. We will be there to provide guidance and insight and factual observations and analysis and you know, calls to action to help those around us. And we need you there to hold us accountable, and not just give us your trust because we're extraordinarily good-looking, but because we've earned your trust and we deserve it. And that's, I'll close with that. I could go on for a while, but I love this community. I'm grateful for this community. Let's keep going out there and protecting the most marginalized among us.
Well said, Qasim. And I look forward to talking to you after your trip, inshallah. I've always wanted to go to Syria, but
yeah,
you know, the war Just the absolute devastation. So inshallah, the Syrian people deserve everything good in this world. Folks, this has been The Left Hook with Qasim Rashid. As Qasim has said, please subscribe. We're terrible capitalists. Everything is free. It's intentional and deliberate because we believe information should be for the people and people should be informed, especially as they fight white supremacists and fascists. We depend on the kindness of our viewers. If you can, please, please become a paid subscriber. It's not that much. Qasim, how do they become a paid subscriber? What's your website?
I just put it in the comment. It's qasimrashid.com/subscribe. $5 or $6 a month and $50 a year.
And this is the lefthook.substack.com/special. It's $3.75 a month forever. So if you think Qasim and I are worth one cup of coffee a month, that's literally it. You're like, you know what? These guys are worth one cup of coffee. That's what how much it costs. If you don't have the money and you're watching on YouTube and Substack, just subscribe. It goes a long way. I've been going on since 1 straight. So that's 5 hours. You've been going on since 4 a.m.?
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, I've not done yet. I've published. I usually do essays with each post that I do. So I'm not lazy, folks. But since so much stuff was breaking, I published like the 3 or 4 of the conversation I did earlier. I'll go back and add some text later tonight. But like my mom's visiting, I have kids, this will be out. I had a fantastic conversation with Dina Dahl, who's a lawyer. Another conversation with Allison Gill. This conversation with Qasim, and I just did my own reflection and thoughts to Samuel Alito's dissent and the fact that it was a 5-4 decision, what should have been a 9-0 slam dunk when it comes to birthright citizenship, which is in the Constitution. This is what we're dealing with, folks. Thank you all for watching. Be kind. Be informed, and please, oh, please don't be a fascist. Thank you, Qasim. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum.